the podcast from Belmont Chapel in Exeter, sharing the story, living the life. For more information, go to belmontchapel.org.uk.
And we're looking really at a Bible text to launch a reflection and explore why it's important for the people of God living in and around Exeter in 2024 to rest, to embrace the principle of rest in our lives. Over these 4 weeks, we've really only dipped into the concept of rest. And if this is something which has grabbed you or intrigued you or something you want to dig a little bit deeper in, then the Bible Project, it's just Google Bible Project, has a whole range of resources that dig really deep. There's something like a 13-part series podcast on it. There's notes, there's studies, there's videos exploring what does it mean to rest? And why should we rest? Now, before we hear our passage being read tonight, I'm going to ask you a question. Now, some of you might recognize the image I'm going to show you because I used it probably a couple of years ago. What's the first thing you see when that pops up on your screen? One image, but you can see two different. Who saw the rabbit first? Who saw the duck first? I haven't got a clue what that means about you. I don't think it does tell us anything psychologically, to be honest, but I think it reminds us that people see the world differently. Not only, of course, individuals, but also communities and cultures describe and explain our lived experiences differently. And building on this idea, again, what about this image? How would you describe the glass of water? Are you naturally a half-empty person? Are you naturally, do you see a half-full? Or are you the smart aleck who just says it's half a cup of water? Now, Alison, who's joined us tonight, she's the eternal optimist in our family. She's certainly a cup half full person. And I'm a recovering pessimist. I'm a work in progress. I'm naturally a cup half empty. So whenever I say, oh no, look what's just happened, Alison is of course going to reply, great, that means we can... dot, dot, dot. And it makes for a very interesting passage. And we did celebrate 26 years last week. So we somehow we've managed to muddle along, even though our outlooks on life are very, very different sometimes. Well, tonight, under the title, The Rest, Rest as Resistance, we're going to be using the Sabbath command found in Deuteronomy chapter 5. We're really going to focus in on verses 12 through to 15 and properly really on to 14 and 15. And we're going to remind ourselves why regular rest can help us live faithful, Christ-centered lives in and around Exeter in the year 2024. Live as disciples of Jesus as we spend time with work colleagues, perhaps neighbours, maybe friends, and even fellow students and family. Many, if not most, for some of us, view life very, very differently. Now, in the book of Deuteronomy, it tells us that after 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, in a land associated in that ancient world with chaos and evil, 40 years spent there due to the lack of trust that the people of God had in God, the people now find themselves on the banks of the River Jordan. They're preparing to cross the river and enter the promised land. And the book of Deuteronomy contains three long speeches by Moses to the people. And I think Walter Brueggemann is right about why the book of Deuteronomy is so long. 30 chapters are instructions to the people before they set a single foot on the other side of the Jordan. He suggests that that Moses believed that the land of Canaan, being so fertile and prosperous, would act as a huge temptation for the people of God to forget. To forget who they were. To forget who they served. To forget which values and beliefs they should live by. So as Ruth comes to read Deuteronomy chapter 5, and we're just going to read the first 15 verses to set it in context. See, as she reads, that if you can identify how Sabbath rest can serve as resistance to the temptations the Israelites were just about to face.
If you have a green Bible, it's on page 175, so it's Deuteronomy chapter 5, reading from verse 1. Moses summoned all Israel and said, "Hear, Israel, the decrees and laws I declare in your hearing today. Learn them and be sure to follow them. The Lord our God made a covenant with us at Horeb, and it was not with our ancestors that the Lord made this covenant, but with us, with all of us who are alive here today. The Lord spoke to you face to face out of the fire on the mountain. At that time I stood between the Lord and you to declare to you the word of the Lord, because you were afraid of the fire and did not go up the mountain. And he said, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself an image in the form of anything in heaven above, or on the earth beneath, or in the waters below. You shall not bow down to them or worship them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generation of those who hate me, but showing love to 1,000 generations of those who love me and keep my commandments. You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not hold anyone guiltless who misuses his name. Observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns, so that your male and female servants may rest as you do. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day."
Brilliant, thank you. Let's pray. Father, as we explore your word now, we ask by your Spirit you would guide our hearts and our minds. Help us to be sensitive to your Spirit's guidance. Take the words that I offer now, Lord, and use them to your glory. Amen. So as others have said in previous weeks, if you've been here, the Sabbath rest commanded here was more than simply stopping all activities in order to recharge one's physical batteries. Yes, of course, living in the ancient world was certainly physically demanding for ordinary people, not the wealthy and powerful, perhaps. But the Sabbath rest is certainly more than just physical rest. It had a spiritual dimension. This regular weekly rest was deliberately designed to remind the Israelites of who they were. Look at Deuteronomy 5, verse 15 with me. "Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm." Within the command for Sabbath rest, God reminds the people that he is Lord of all. A God who is not limited by geography, but who is present everywhere in his creation, even Egypt. And in the ancient world, the gods were located to lands. They were limited generally by lands. Gods could only operate in certain areas. But here, God comes to a land that is inhabited by other gods, perhaps. Here's a God who heard the cries of the people, a God who was interested in what was happening in his creation. A God who remained faithful to his covenant promises. A God who came and rescued his people. A God who demonstrated that he is more powerful than the Egyptian gods. A God who turned his people from landless slaves into a nation with a mission and a purpose. The Sabbath rest, you see, was an opportunity for God's people to remember that they were a chosen people. A people set apart from others. A people called to live differently. A people on a mission. And if you read the rest of Deuteronomy, you will see that remembering what God has done in the past is a recurring theme. In fact, 16 times throughout the book, the people of God are called to remember God's faithfulness in the past. 16 times God's faithfulness to his covenant promises and his covenant people is described. Now, when the people of God entered and lived in the promised land, as they were about to, they would be surrounded by people who worshipped different gods. They were going to be amongst different tribal groups. The people there lived different lives, lived by different values or standards than the people of God. Moses' instructions in Deuteronomy were trying to stop God's people being led astray by the prosperity and perhaps the novelty of the new land. What they found there that was different. It was new, perhaps. For some, perhaps exciting. They were settling into a far more stable situation, with perhaps farming and even urban environments, which they'd never experienced before, because previously it was a more nomadic wilderness life. So the command for Sabbath rest gave the people of God an opportunity to remember all God had done for them in the past, so that they could resist the temptations and distractions they encountered in the promised land. And in particular, resisted worshipping the gods and idols of the nations around them. Again, what some of the other Ten Commandments refer to. Now, in many ways, our lives in the 21st century, Exeter, are very different to the lives of God's covenant people who lived over 3,000 years ago as they prepared to enter the promised land. I'm going to give you a few seconds just to make a mental list in your head about how different our lives today are compared to then. What are some of the instant reactions, instant thoughts that you had? Like teaching again. Mobile phones. So communication's different. That also involves time of communication, how quickly you hear from and don't and hear back and that sort of thing. And your own expectations of communication. Other things? Traveling. Yeah. So communication, so radio, we've got technology and things. Travel. Again, people's travel. I don't know how many people have zoomed off around the world for this holiday. Huge number of differences. There are geographical differences, climate and location, cultural differences, perhaps the role of women, perhaps the food, dress codes, technological differences, radios, we've talked about mobile phones, we've talked about communication, but also technology which allows leisure time, which in the ancient world was something that for many people didn't exist in the sense that we understand it today. There are spiritual differences as well. We live as members of God's new creation, if you're part of the people of God today. Not the old covenant, but the new covenant. But equally, of course, we have life in common as well. And one item in common, despite the huge gap in time from then to now, is that we also here in Exeter in the 21st century face temptations and distractions from being surrounded by people whose beliefs and actions are based on different values and ideas. So whether that's at work or home or play, we are often surrounded by people who think and act differently. Think about a particular work colleague, or a friend you meet socially, or even a family member who's not a disciple of Jesus. See if you can identify, I'm not going to ask you to share this, how they think and act differently to you. Think about how are they guided by different values or different beliefs than that you hold. Now, my daughter Emily works in advertising. I don't know if I'm embarrassed or proud about that. But her final year dissertation for a psychology degree, her undergraduate degree at university, identified, I don't know if this is going to apply to any of you, which colours and which words had the greatest influence on the buying habits of young adults who are particularly interested in living and eating healthily. So her research involved using lots of words and looking at different colours, but even the saturation of different colours and how much of that colour was actually in the packaging, and was able to demonstrate these things make a difference. That's why thousands and millions of pounds a year is spent on advertising. Now, in many ways, the primary purpose of advertising is to change people's behaviour, their habits, and perhaps even their values. Now, while some advertising is blunt and in your face, the big stuff up here, Piccadilly Circus, actually the most effective are those which you don't notice, which are so subtle, perhaps, that they impact you subconsciously. Now, examples of these involve product placement, perhaps when companies pay to have their products in films, or in TV programmes. I'll show my age here. KFC paid money so that there's an association between Joey and KFC. So that when perhaps you're deciding what you want to eat, those sort of subconscious messages will leak out. Influencers, of course, have been around for a long time, but now it's an official career path for some people. Another way is through companies sponsoring events. So last summer, Emily's based actually in Toronto. She was working with Bell Telecommunications and their sponsorship of the Dragon Boat Festival in Toronto. They were the second sponsors for the event. Companies like their name to be associated with sports events or just any activities. It makes the company name become more familiar. And those attending, watching on TV or whatever, trust is built between the company and the people by its association. People are subconsciously more likely to choose to buy products or services from it when compared to other companies they've never really interacted with or know about. Well, that's advertising. But that, if you like, subtle subconscious messaging, I think, can influence us. If you're a follower of Jesus, surrounded by values and ideas and beliefs and behaviours that are different from you, I think it's possible for us to subconsciously be influenced by these. We can change the way we behave, perhaps, to fit in sometimes, or the things we believe even, simply through the continual, gentle and subtle presence in our lives, of work colleagues, the people we interact day by day, friends, family members of sports teams perhaps we're involved in, our neighbours. And because of all this, this is why I believe the message of Deuteronomy is also helpful to followers of Jesus today. The Bible clearly teaches us to regularly carve out time to stop and remember who we are in Christ, to review whether our behaviour and values have been influenced by the values of the people we live amongst. Now, last week we came together as a church community to remember and celebrate Easter, to remember the death and resurrection of Jesus, and so remind ourselves that we are new covenant people, to celebrate God through Jesus rescued us from the slavery of sin and adopted us into his family as his children. That's an annual rhythm. Some church traditions have a very strong calendar, a rhythm of remembrance, a rhythm of liturgy. I wonder what other rhythms of remembrance you've already built into your lives. Do you have a daily, a weekly, monthly, or annual rhythm of rest which you find helpful? Which help you to resist the temptations to adopt the values or worship the idols of those that we're surrounded by, that we live amongst? Some rhythms of remembrance you may do on your own. And some, you, when we gather together, in a sense, regularly gathering here is a rhythm of remembrance as we gather together. Which ones do you use? Which ones do you find helpful? I wonder. And since we're all different, of course, we have different personalities, different spiritualities, I'm sure each of us has found some rhythms more helpful than others. So it's not automatically a case of saying, is this rhythm is the rhythm that everybody should follow? But we maybe find some more useful than others in our own personal lives, as well as our corporate gathered lives. And there may be special locations. When my dog used to walk, she now just stands there and sniffs because she's a bit old. Then that was one of my special times of just being away from the office, being away really from any communication, turn my phone off. That would be one of my special times of just spending time with God and throwing a ball. There may be particular resources that you find helpful. Again, it may be you're the sort of person who likes to listen to music. And so you find your own time to praise God. There may be particular podcasts that help direct your memory and understanding of the Bible, or books, or there may be, again, liturgy and rhythms that you prefer. And of course, the Bible is accessible through so many forms of technology these days. Which ways do you find the most helpful, helping you rest and remember? Now, as our modern secular world has rejected more and more of its historical Christian cultural identity, I think we're going to face a greater temptation or feel greater pressure, perhaps, to conform to other values in the coming years. Society at the moment seems to be becoming less tolerant of difference, less accepting of freedom of thought and expression. Therefore, those times when we rest, I think, are going to become even more important, as we seek to hold on to our identity in more pressurized circumstances, as we seek to resist that cultural pressures when we're scattered away from our communities, perhaps, during the rest of the week, not on a Sunday. Now, before I finish talking, I want to just add a little more supplementary comment. The Sabbath command in Deuteronomy 5 did not simply call on the people to remember. It also gave them the opportunity to live out their faith as well. Let me read Deuteronomy 5 verse 14 again. It's up on the screen. But the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your town, so that your male and female servants may rest as you do. The Sabbath rest also allowed the people of God the opportunity to show how they were different. Not for them to just remember that they were different, but to show how they were different to the surrounding nations. Look on how God calls on the people to treat their servants. Some translations will have slaves. There's a debate over whether the people of God had slaves or just servants. A bit of a technical thing. But in verse 14, look, it says, nor your male or female servants in the NIV, so that your male and female servants may rest as you do. Not only are God's people to rest, but the whole community is to rest as well. And that was so countercultural to the ancient Near East. So different to how God's people were treated by the Egyptians. In the ancient world, of course, servants or slaves were simply objects or commodities to use and then discard if you have no more use. Their welfare was of little interest to the wealthy and powerful because you could always buy or capture another. Only those in power, those in charge, the wealthy and leaders in society generally rested, while slaves and ordinary people continued to serve them. The work of industry and kingdom building went on 24/7. The Sabbath rest command is also a witness to the surrounding nations that God's covenant kingdom values are different, that the people of God have different priorities in life. Just mentioning Walter Brueggemann again. He helpfully compares the approach to life of the Egyptians and the people of God, using these two terms, restlessness and restfulness. He argues that the Egyptian nation was a life of restlessness as they constantly sought to build their national wealth and power, that they were continually trying to be bigger, better than others, the most wealthy, the most powerful. The Egyptians never had enough. They were always looking for more. But at the same time, Brueggemann makes an interesting point. They were also anxious about losing all they possessed. Listen to what Pharaoh says to Moses back in Exodus when Moses and Aaron, when they are asked to hold a festival in the wilderness for the Israelites. This is back in Exodus 5. But the king of Egypt said, "Moses and Aaron, why are you taking the people away from their labor? Get back to your work." Then Pharaoh said, "Look, the people of the land are now numerous, and you are stopping them from working." The Sabbath rest command stands in contrast to the restlessness of the Egyptians. The restlessness of the restfulness of the people of God reflects the trust that they had in him. They didn't have to work 24/7, 7 days a week, since he rescued them from slavery. They chose to live by his values and to seek to fulfill his purposes in their lives. Everyone is treated the same. The servants are made in the image of God, so worthy of care. They're not to be exploited nor treated as second-class citizens. The powerless are not valueless for the people of God. Since God cares for the servants, the foreigners and the children, just as much as he cares for those who have wealth, have power and freedom to make choices for themselves. A life focused, like the Egyptians did, primarily on increasing one's wealth, one's power, one's status, is not in keeping with God's values or vision for his people. Sabbath rest is also resistance because it shows others that the people of God live by different values. 35 years ago, I don't know if anybody's read Stanley Hauerwas's and William Willimon's book, Resident Aliens. This was the point they were making to the culture in America. God's people should look different, they said, because we live by different standards, different values. We should live as strangers and aliens, picking up the language from 1 Peter. Chapter 2, in our secular communities, since we have different goals and different aspirations. And if I'm honest, I'm a living example of how Christian living, an alternative lifestyle shaped by God's values and instructions, can draw people to Jesus. Because I became a disciple of Jesus back in 1991, that was a few years ago, after witnessing the lives of Christian students on my course at university. And I was intrigued about why they were different from other students. So this evening, we've used the Sabbath rest command from Deuteronomy to reflect on how a regular rhythm of rest can help us resist. Resist the temptations and pressures on living as strangers and aliens in our increasingly, resist the temptations and pressures by living as strangers and aliens in our increasingly secular culture, and how by living by God's values and instructions, we testify to the saving and reconciling power of Jesus. We're going to have an opportunity later to pray, and we're going to sing a couple of songs. For those who aren't familiar with the way that we do our services in the evening, you can see there's no band here. We're going to join in with some music which has come through the PowerPoint in a minute. So let us use the words of Isaac Watts's hymn, "When I Survey the Wondrous Cross," to both remember and to declare the love of God for you and for me. Let us all stand together and let's join in with the Tabernacle Choir, I think it is, tonight.